This is a Power 98.7 podcast. Now we're talking. Subscribe to Power 98.7 podcasts in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. There's more on power987.co.za.
So the conversation we're going to have now is looking at the structural inequalities that have played out during COVID-19, and this is due to remote learning at TVET colleges as well as universities around the country. So we're also taking your calls on 0861 987 000. Are you at any higher education institution, whether it is a university or a TVET college? What was your experience like, especially during the height of COVID-19 and when the restrictions were quite stringent around the movement of people, including how many people are allowed in and around higher education facilities? So 0861 987 000. You can also tweet at Aldrin St. Pierre, hashtag Power Talk, and also tweet at PowerFM987. We'll be joined by Dr. Nicola Branson, who's a senior researcher in the Southern African Labour Development Research Unit at the University of Cape Town. Dr. Branson, good morning and welcome to Power Talk.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Looking at the research that you have done, what jumped at you immediately?
I suppose it was just very clear that, firstly, the levels of access in South Africa to internet in particular, but also to a device of which to learn, are very low. So we might not be surprised given the levels of poverty in this country, but it was quite stark to look across the municipalities and see the low levels of access to internet and devices such as computers or laptops of which students could learn. So it really brought to fore that, you know, if we were expecting students to continue their learning using online platforms, this was unlikely to happen for the majority of students.
Mm-hmm. And interestingly, what this research also does is that it also looks at the access of a device and having a device. But when you find that some people who do have the devices, there's an issue around access to the net.
Correct. Exactly. So some of the strategies that institutions were doing were providing students with data bundles and those kind of things. So data bundles, some universities provided laptops. NSFAS was also trying to get the National Student Financial Aid students provided with laptops if they didn't already have. But as you just pointed out, you know, you do need all these different components. You need internet, you need the device, and you need electricity to be able to continue. And it was particularly the internet access that we found from this nationally representative data was lacking in most households. So whether students could then use their cell phones to then access data from their cell phones, that could have been a strategy. But just looking at sort of access to internet within the household, we find that very low.
Okay. And why specifically did you look at municipalities? And can you just quickly tell us what you found from some of these municipalities?
Okay. So the reason we use municipalities is we wanted to look at a national picture of student access, both students coming from our public colleges and our public universities. And the data that we had was representative only at the municipality level. So the data comes from what's called the community survey from 2016. And that's the survey that StatsSA does in between the censuses. So it's a very large survey and allows us to look across different municipalities. Mm-hmm. And then what we could do is we could link where students live, so where are their home environments, and put them into the municipalities they come from, mm-hmm. and then say, what are the characteristics of those municipalities?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And I see that for TVET students, the concentration is lower. 25% of all students in TVET and the TVET sector come from the city of Cape Town, Ekurhuleni, eThekwini, and the city of Tshwane municipalities. Further, 25% of TVET students come from 12 municipalities in total, with the remaining 50 distributed across the 194 municipalities. So are you also then finding that amongst the municipalities as well, there is this stark inequality levels that we are seeing?
Yes, very much so. So definitely across different municipalities, sort of more urban areas tend to be better off in terms of resource access. And but then even within a municipality, you can imagine if you're thinking of Joburg or I'm in the city of Cape Town, mm-hmm. you can think about different areas within a municipality are quite different in terms of what a household has access to.
Okay, and what should we read into this and understanding it as well? Because I'm now thinking about, so you have TVET colleges and they all have the same national legislation that comes from national, from the higher education department. Yet when it comes to the implementation of its work, they find it difficult because of these issues around disparities and even speaking about the income disparities among some of these students.
Yeah, I think that's a very good point. And I think it brings to bear that even though the policy is coming from national, on the ground at different colleges, they're experiencing, different circumstances, and they have to then adjust their strategies to meet the students, you know, at their level or at where they're coming from in terms of their home environment. So one of the things that I've heard is that during the hard lockdown, what some of the TVET colleges did was they recognized that many students do have access to a cell phone. So they have access to a cell phone and they have access to textbooks, which are supplied at the beginning of the year. So they could use those two pieces of information to then provide a strategy. So a lecturer could then say to students, contact them via WhatsApp and use the textbook to continue the learning. And in other provinces, I think it was in Limpopo, one of the colleges did some live broadcasting. So you can see, depending on sort of their student body, I think the colleges had to make different strategies. And I think they're very, very aware of that, that their students were coming from households which tended not to have access to the facilities that would allow them to continue online. Mm-hmm. I think on the other hand, many of the colleges don't have online platforms that they could continue their learning with anyway. So it wasn't really an option to say continue using an online platform where some of the universities have fairly established online learning facilities already.
Yeah. And so does this also then say that we need to have a different way or different approach in how we understand higher education? Because I'm now thinking about basic education, and basic education have what they call a quintile system. Mm-hmm. And this is obviously based on the households that use those schooling systems and the income of those households. And then that would then give an indication to the basic education department how it should be responding to those schools in terms of the resources that they may need.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, I think that is a very interesting point that I haven't thought about. And I think, you know, the quintile system within the schools is the way that government uses to allocate the resources, the non-personal resources to schools. So poorer schools have a higher allocation per learner. Yeah. Part of the reason they do that is because schools in quintile 5 and 4 are still allowed to charge fees. So those schools in the quintile 5 can then actually, you know, make that up with their fees. I think within the university sector, we have a similar but slightly different thing going on where some institutions have a high proportion of their students funded by NSFAS, so the National Student Financial Aid Scheme, whereas others have a larger proportion that are paying fees. So in some ways, we've already got a redistribution happening in terms of the resources, but that's going directly to the student as opposed to directly to the institution. So I think your point of thinking about what that means in terms of direct access to the institutions is a fair one. I think, you know, some of the other funding mechanisms that are in place already are trying to adjust some of the inequalities that we've inherited.
Okay, 0861 987 000. You can also tweet at Aldrin St. Pierre, hashtag Power Talk, and also tweet at Power FM 987. We're in conversation with Dr. Nicola Branson, senior researcher in the Southern African Labour Development Research Union unit that is at the University of Cape Town. And the question we're asking you is your experience during COVID-19 in terms of remote learning. What has it been like? Were there any struggles at all? And what were those struggles? And just looking at some of the research that they've done as well. And how institutions should be responding differently to these inequalities that have been now brought to bear. 0861 987 000. You can also tweet at Aldrin St. Pierre, hashtag Power Talk, and also tweet at Power FM 987.
Speak up. Call the Power Line on 0861 987 000.
And you can also tweet at Aldrin St. Pierre, hashtag Power Talk, and also tweet at Power FM 987. Here's a tweet here from Offenso. It says that one thing people don't look at is how people with disabilities were excluded, visual disabilities, that is. Some students need specialized computers to do their work. A student from a rural area, no NSFAS, no device, no 4G, is absolutely helpless. Dr. Branson, your take on that?
Yeah, I mean, that is a very good point. A lot of the online platforms do require that you can access resources visually. I don't have anything further to say about that. Mm. I think it's a big challenge, and it should also be taken into account.
Yeah. Okay. And then if we look at, for instance, mental health, and I don't know if the research touched on that at all, did the students respond to that at all?
No, this research was very much based on secondary data, so it wasn't interviewing students directly. Mm-hmm. But I think this is a very important area that needs to be reflected on and looked at further.
Mm-hmm. What are some of those other areas that you think that we should be looking at?
So one of the things, this study actually forms part of a broader project where we're going to be looking at a couple of things that have resulted from the pandemic. And one of the areas is looking at what it means in terms of the students that are going to be coming into the system next year. And so basically those that have experienced their matric year in 2020. So what does that mean in terms of who actually gets through matric, who manages to get the bachelor's path to carry on to university, and how that sort of shifts in terms of inequalities. So given that, as we spoke about inequalities within the sort of higher education space, we have similar things going on in our basic education, and how has that impacted who actually fares well in the matric exam, who then goes on to access different institutions, and what that means sort of for perpetuating some of the inequalities that we've seen and some of the steps that we've made forward. Have we then shifted our way back?
Mm-hmm. So does this mean that the higher education institutions may have to relook the M-score system and the criteria as well? Because it's a valid point that you raise now. And considering that our government has decided to go ahead with the academic year and try to save the academic year, of course, there are a lot of students who have been under tremendous pressure during this period, and taking into consideration issues around mental health, for instance, and then also the pressure around not having access to some of the much needed resources, as you've indicated, when it comes to network coverage and so forth. So this particular story that you tell through the lens of higher education students could be similarly apply to kids who are still in school.
Correct, exactly. And I think, it's something I think we're going to see for a couple of years, the sort of catching up. In terms of the higher education space, I think we would need to sort of be aware that students might be coming in with a different level of sort of completion, like based from their last year of school, what did they actually gain from that? And already we know that, you know, many students enter the higher education space where they're not necessarily prepared for the level of learning that takes place in, for instance, the universities. Mm-hmm. And so it will really be about upping that support that students get in the first year. So we do have quite a few sort of programs within our higher education space which make sure that students that are coming in on a bit of a back foot are helped. But it would really be about making sure that we can identify students that need that support so that they can continue without then dropping out because they're not keeping pace. Mm.
But what about the admission criteria?
Yeah, I mean, it's a good question. Would we want to adjust the admission criteria given that it is a once-off, hopefully a once-off incident? But I think that might be something that different institutions will have to look at when they find their applicants and see, you know, is it that students just receive much lower average marks on the NSC? And what does that mean in terms of who they admit? Because often what the institutions have, they have like a band. And so you obviously have to at least get a certain level, you know, you have to perform at least at a certain level in your NSC. But maybe what they will find is that on average, the marks are a little bit lower than they usually have.
Yeah. I don't wonder whether the higher education... what's it called again? Higher Education South Africa Council. Whether they should then start having a conversation even with Umalusi about when Umalusi does the adjustments lower or downwards, and they say that, hey, listen, because of COVID-19 and because of some of the pressures that even the markers will go through currently, we have considered to adjust some of the marks.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's an important point to bring up, bearing in mind at the same time that we don't want to be admitting students into institutions where they can't then be successful. So it's a little bit, you know, it's a balancing act where do we want to adjust the matric marks to the extent that that then puts students on, you know, on a back foot when they enter the higher education space.
To avoid a high dropout rate as well.
Exactly. But at the same time, you know, you don't want to penalize students for the year that they had. I mean, one thing that comes to mind is the tests that are done in the university space, which try and test more for sort of inherent ability of students. So it won't really be about the matric content, but it'll be about testing. Maybe what institutions can do is they can, you know, value or weight that other test a little bit higher than they usually do.
Okay, thank you so much. So that is Dr. Nicola Branson, Senior Researcher in the Southern African Labour Development Research Unit that is at the University of Cape Town.
You've been listening to a Power 98.7 podcast. For more podcasts, visit power987.co.za or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.